Alrighty, well, with that being done, I guess we'll kick off our afternoon session. The first speaker this afternoon is Mr. Bill Manning on IPv4 v6 translation methods.
Okay, this is my political commentary. For those of you in the back, this is our new president of the United States of America. And he ran on a platform of change. And what he says at the bottom there in the small print is all we have left. Seriously, America, we are totally out of bills. We've got maybe 87 cents in change left. I've looked everywhere, even under the cushions. They didn't leave anything. Right? So that's my political commentary. I'm going to talk a little bit about some transition experiences that one of my students and I did. He's presenting this next week at the Department of Energy Internet 2 joint tech meeting in College Station, where they are installing this particular transition technology. Anybody using IPv6 now? Raise your hands. How are you using IPv6? Are you using it natively? No. Native. No IPv4. No IPv4. Anybody using native IPv6 only? Liar. Hand waving. We have a gay gentleman in the back. Okay. How many people are running dual stack? Do you like dual stack?
Like a wiki.
All right. Well, it kind of works, right? So one of the things we did is we looked at dual stack and we said, well, dual stack sucks because you've got two protocol stacks you've got to worry about routing two different places, you've got all these end systems, and dual stack really doesn't seem to work particularly well. And a young gentleman in China looked at this and he created a thing called IVI, which was, we'll get into that in just a minute. So we're going to look at this. This is post IPv4 completion. This is when all the IPv4 space is in use, which is soon, right? One assumes soon is the RIR. APNIC is going to be out of space in about 18 to 20 months. They won't give you any more after that unless they change their policies. And even then, they won't have a whole bunch left. So as ISPs, you got to figure out what to do post IPv4 when you can't greenfield into V4 space anymore. Well, they're telling you V6. Problem is there's this huge internet thing that's running on this thing called IPv4, and you're going to have these V6 only things, and you won't have enough V4 space to dual stack everybody, right? So you're going to have this V4 V6 coexistence problem. You're going to have some way to have the V4 nodes talk to the V6 nodes and some way for the V6 nodes to talk to the V4 nodes. Right? Nod your heads yes. I'll make sure you had not fallen asleep by eating too much lunch. All right? So there have been a number of people looking at this about 9 years ago. Inside the IETF there was a thing called the NAT-PT, or the NAT Protocol Translator. It required the support of a thing called a DNS application layer gateway. And about 2 years ago, it was deprecated to historic status. Nobody ever could really figure out how to make it work. There was a lot of argument there. There were deep dependencies on the application layer, the DNS application layer gateway, some shared state. Today, there is no standard. How many different ways of doing dual stack are there? There's NAT. 6 to 4, NAT 4 to 6, NAT. Brian, help me out here.
42.
You want a number? I want a list. I've given you three of the 42. Give me the rest of the 39.
In my presentation, there is a list. It's two slides.
It's two slides. There's a lot of them, right? And IVI is one of them. What this is this is the Chinese doing a clever play on Roman numerals, right? Ah, come back here. This was originally conceived by a gentleman named Xing Li. Why is it doing that? Stop that. Stop. And it's been since redone in two internet drafts under the Behave Working Group, one by Xing Li and one by Fred Baker. This is based on SIT and NAPPT. There's a slightly different address format here, and there's no shared state. The cool thing here is that unlike normal dual stack things where you're doing shared state or you're stealing ports, if you're doing an address port thing, this is stateless, which means that it can run really, really fast on relatively old hardware. And you can run native IPv6 on one side without dual stack and their native V4 without dual stack, and they can talk to each other. Recent additions to IVI do stateful address translation as part of a particular thing here. So the addressing format itself is a little different. You have this LIR prefix. It consists of two parts. There's the ISP prefix. I really have to learn how to do this.
Right? You click on the arrows rather than the play and stop.
Click on the arrows? Like that one? Okay. So you have the normal prefix. There's an IVI marker, FF, with some zeros. And then you embed an IPv4 address or set of addresses. So with IVI, you really do need a block of V4 addresses. It's part of the translation service. But those end up being relatively temporary, the expectation is, because you're doing a translation that's going to be a short duration thing, hopefully. Hopefully a decade or less. It always works out that way on the internet. Unless there's like a real scary thing going on here. So we have the prefix, we have the embedded IPv4 part, and then the rest of it is the all zeros stuff. And that maps to an IPv4 address. And how to do the translation. This is a busy slide. I'm going to have to talk to Conda on this. Tethered. I thought this was mobile. So we've got an IPv6 host. He wants to talk. He has to do a DNS query. This is to an IVI DNS thing. The response comes back with the target address. This was the mapped address. And then he puns it through the gateway. The gateway then does the unwraps the mapping and points it out to the V4 host out here at the other end. Same way on the other side when you're going back the other way. In this case, he may have to do some forward queries into the rest of the DNS to get the actual target IP address so he can synthesize the appropriate V6 address on the other side. What this means is that if you're going to put up a V6-only cluster, you need an IVI gateway and you need a DNS application box that need to be able to understand V4 and V6. So you have two machines that do dual stack, not everybody on both sides. And that way you can stand up native V6-only machines that have no problems talking to the rest of the V4 internet. And normal sorts of routing topology, the IVI gateway is the gateway in either case. In the case of the IPv4 network, you have a range of V4 addresses which map to these things on the other side. And you have a gateway that points in towards that. And he has a default that points out from the V6 side, which then points to the rest of the internet. We ran this as a demo initially during the public demo was at the Aaron Nanog meeting in October of last year. We set it up. We talked to a bunch of folks. We did this only as a only in the stateless translator mode. Because the Nanog people were gun shy, we put it on a different SSID, though. We could have done it on the same one. We had to do the addressing manually because the address format's a little different. The current addressing models don't work. So we did this in the good old-fashioned way. I wanted to use paperclips, or not paperclips, but clothespins. But we didn't have the budget for clothespins, so we used strips of paper. which we hand people their IPv6 address, the DNS server address, and the SSID. This was using relatively old hardware, right? And a relatively old operating system. So we had the old operating system with the IVI patch. We were running TOTD for the DNS application thing. There is an alternative way to do that, by the way. And then an old Pentium 3 with a couple of gig E interfaces. At the NANOG meeting, it didn't break a sweat. We actually pushed it, and we were able to get about 850 megabits throughput before there started to be problems. So on old hardware, this is actually pretty quick. We only had 6 people that actually stayed up for the entire time. But that had more to do with the fact that we were changing between NANOG and Aaron, and people were coming and going. We had 1,500 addresses translated. 90% of the communication was through this IVI gateway. Less than 10% was native IPv6, but there was a noticeable, statistical, measurable percent of native IPv6 traffic out of this, which is kind of nice because it passes the native traffic through no problem, and it'll do the translation where the translation needs to happen. The CPU load was not measurable. You couldn't tell, right? It was loafing along at 0% utilization. And we moved a reasonable number of packets through there without breaking a sweat. We support, this supported a whole bunch of stuff. This supports SSL, HTTP, SSH, SMTP, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And that kind of tells you what people were doing at the NANOG and Aaron meetings. Right? Lots of other. That looks like BitTorrent to me. Right? So for issues with this demo, we had a couple of problems. The address assignment thing was the real kicker, because the IETF definition of using router advertisement to pass out addresses doesn't work. Because IVI changes the way the addresses are expected to be shown to show up. It's a mapped V4 address. And there's no way RA could do that, because it assumes to use the MAC address to build the V6 address. So we can't use RA. We could use DHCP V6, but then you'd have to install the client software. And DHCP V6 is still not really cooked. So we use the manual thing. And we've talked with the DHCP folks, and we've actually built some patches for DHCP v6 that will do the right kind of handout. Name resolution was kind of interesting because Windows XP had a problem. Microsoft can't resolve DNS queries over native IPv6. They really can't do it, right? They'll talk v6, but they won't query the name servers over V6.
Not even
in
Vista.
Does that say Vista? Okay, I didn't think it said Vista. No. It says XP. All right, good. Vista didn't have any problems. There I go. I'm sorry, I live in a different world than you do. I've got probably 60% of my Windows penetration is XP.
By the time you actually end up deploying IPv6, you will be Vista.
Oh, no, I've already deployed IPv6. The problem is that the Windows people are screwed. And I tell them they have to upgrade to Vista, and they go... Right? So I have this problem.
Windows 7, which is Vista's service pack too, really.
Yeah. Right. So I have this problem with the Windows community because they believe that they are, in fact, on the moral and ethical high ground, and I think that they are, in fact, depraved. But then we get into religious arguments, and I don't want to do that here. Too much, other than they need to upgrade. Right? There are a couple of ways that we worked with the folks with Xinli's students, and we have a patch to this where we can get the XP guys to actually get their address through DHCP. We which is kind of cool. And I'll show you that if you want to see it. The demo is actually being built right now, so you're not going to see this because this is the demo for next week. And I'm not presentient, and we'll tell you how it turns out. In the IETF, the standardization process, there is a big push to actually replace or augment or upgrade or find something to do about NAT-PT. As Brian says, he's got a list of 2 pages in, you know, 4-point type or something in his presentation of the number of different possible candidates. In October, there was an interim meeting in Canada where they got most of the folks in a room. Richard, did you get your toy? Okay, no toy for you. I'm sorry. The Nano was actually won by Bill Manning. Find somebody. He's got a Nano for you with military secrets on it. Anyway, so there was this interim meeting. They locked everybody in a hotel room in someplace in frozen Canada, and they came up with a possible solution that says, we're going to actually reduce the number of possible candidates here. We're going to try and merge capabilities together and see what we can come up with. So they've come up with this thing that supports both stateless and stateful. Fred Baker's got these internet drafts out, and the IVI code is being modified to be able to support this kind of stuff right now. So the summary here is that for address assignment, route advertisement, the stuff that is in most of your gear, cannot distribute the mapping address space. Doesn't know how. So you require DHCP v6. That requires the client to be installed on most of the software. So for Unixes, you can get ISC, you can get the wide DHCP v6. There's a couple of choices. The Vista support for DHCP v6 will do it as long as RA isn't seen. So if Vista sees RA, it'll shut off DHCP v6, which seems kind of stupid, but that's the way it is. So the way to do this properly is actually to get the patches in DHCP v6, which we've got some folks working on. There are protocols that carry embedded IP addresses. These are problematic because... Hello? Okay. They're problematic because the addresses don't actually get translated once they're on the other side, and therefore they become unusable. So SIP, some web applications, and most IPv4 NAT boxes. This is Conda with his rose-colored glasses on, says those are all going to be gone after v6 deployment. And you know, I concur with him, but I think that time frame is like 30 to 40 years. The other issue, and this is the thing that I kind of jumped up and down on him, was, well, how do you validate, if you're turning DNSSEC on, how do you validate this stuff? Because remember that DNS application guy tried to synthesize an address. How's that going to work? You can't really synthesize, you can't validate a synthesized record. You can only validate the original A record. And I suggested to him a thing called incremental signing. We'll show you that in a minute. The other is address selection. In an IPv6 only network, the host must select a most similar addressing pair. So if I've got a V4 address, and I've got the IVI gateway, which has got the V6 mapped space, and the IVI host, if he wants to talk to the V4 host, he's got to pick something that maps most closely to what he thinks is there. Right? In a dual stack network, the host must use or select the V4 address if it's the destination, if the destination is a synthesized V6 address. So the address selection criteria is a little different here to here. Right? And most of the work today on address selection has been down in a dual stack arena. But if you decide to adopt an IVI style approach, your address selection criteria will be different. Short appendix. This is the DNSSEC problem, right? So I've got the DNS node.example.com. You go to the root, he says, where's this? I can't find it, so he goes to com. with the appropriate signatures. We did this at lunch, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And then com goes and he says, we'll go to example. Example goes down here and says, node.example.com, give me the A record. He gives him the A record. But that's mapped to a quad A record at the gateway. The signature is over the A record, so the validation is going to fail. How do I fix that? Turn DNSSEC off? DNS is the core of the internet. Everything depends on the DNS. I might as well turn off routing.
Get the gateway to re-sign the address that's given out.
Get the gateway to re-sign the addresses.
Yeah.
Except the DNS service isn't in the gateway.
Isn't it a DNS gateway, though?
There's a DNS application layer thing, which is separate from the IBI box. But you're on to something. This is actually using a technique called incremental signing. So you acquire the A record, you synthesize the quad A record, and you incrementally sign it when you add it to the zone.
Yeah.
Works a treat. But it won't work with TOTD. You actually have to run a full-blown dual-stack DNS server with a foot in both camps. So it works. And the IBA node can do that. No, we're not going to do that. That's it. Questions? Anybody want to do native IPv6? It's actually a lot simpler than running dual stack. Where do you get the IBI patches? How's good your Chinese? Not very good. Okay. Mine isn't either. I have the patches here. It's a couple of hundred line patches to source code for the kernel. I'll be happy to give it to you afterwards if you got a thumb drive. And it's got the URLs of where the websites are and everything for posting, all that good stuff. How ready for prime time?
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, would you run production stuff on this? I don't know you. I'm running production stuff on it. I've got four sites that are running production. We're going to turn on the University of Texas College Station Computer Science Department over the weekend. So we've got 4,000 or 5,000 people behind 5 or 6 IBI gateways. And it's been running pretty successfully for 6 months, 8 months now. I have actually turned off the IPv4 stuff at my house for big chunks of it and am waiting for the regional registry to offer me a bounty so I can turn in my V4 space for money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were saying before that there was... Actually, throw me a mic.
Throw you a mic?
Yeah.
Okay. This, by the way, this fish is levitated by sound. He was in this little pool of water down here, which is the speaker, and they turned the stereo on, and the water boiled away, and the fish levitated. He was kind of upset because he was out of the water. But as far as I know, that's the first time that you can actually levitate with sound.
Was he alive after it? Was he alive after?
Oh yeah, they let him down.
So you were saying before that there was a measurable about 10% in that trial native V6, which the IBI system just passes straight through.
Right.
That's really good because it made me think that there was a good migration path for, you know, if and when more V6 gets deployed in the internet and we're going to less V4. What is the migration path for IBI completely look like? You're still sitting on these... on these V6 addresses that have this V4 kind of munged in there?
No. On this side, on the V6 native side, it's V6.
Right.
I go get a /32 from APNIC, and I take the FF00, the next octet to the 48, and I say, that's going to be my V4 IBI translation pool.
Yeah.
And I can number significant portions of the entire IPv4 internet in a /48 in v6 world.
Sure.
Right? So I got a lot of room. So I put everybody, I give everybody the appropriate v6 address from that space.
Yep.
And as far as anybody else is concerned, that's native IPv6 routable space. They don't care.
It's just got the FF and
it's
some
munch. It's got the FF00 in there, yep, in some place that nobody really cares about.
Yep.
Except you. All right? And so they're running happily with their native IPv6.
Yep.
And if they want to talk to the V4, their V4 network, there's this little IVI gateway piece that talks to V4. And sure, as more and more people turn on native V6, the traffic doesn't go through IVI. It goes through the standard V6-only router.
Yep. So,
or it can go through the IVI box. And so as the traffic goes down, traffic on IVI goes down.
Yep.
And when it goes to zero, or goes to 10% or whatever, yeah, number you want, you go, done.
Yep. So once we go, boop, done, how do we reclaim that address space?
Well, how do you reclaim the what? The 00 space?
Yep.
Why reclaim it?
Because
why?
We don't need it anymore.
What are you going to replace it with? 00 FF?
You've got the...
So you, three? I don't understand.
Okay. Right? Well, then, quiet, and I'll explain to you.
All right.
So you've got this bit in the address, which is FF00, and your IPv4.
It's stuck as part of a 48. If you want to do RA, you can then turn on RA and give everybody something entirely different part of the 48.
Yep.
And they'll then have two V6 addresses they can play with.
All right.
Right? Or you turn it off and you just say, I'm going to use this. It doesn't matter. As far as the outside world is concerned, it doesn't matter. You turn off the IVI gateway, those are still perfectly valid IPv6 globally unique IP addresses.
I see. Yep. All good. I like it.
And so once you jump native IPv6 with something like IVI,
yeah,
you never have to go back, and you can just watch
it slowly.
The V4 flood kind of slow down, hopefully, and stop after a while. And if it doesn't ever go down and the V6 stuff goes away, then you've got the V4 space already there, and you renumber everybody back into V4.
Yep. All good. Thanks.
Which hopefully Philip won't complain about. Yo. You know, it's not really fair. I have these lights and I really can't see. You look like sort of Apple iPod people back there.
I may be a bit slow, as you found at lunchtime, but so this obviously doesn't allow V4 traffic to talk to V6 servers.
Absolutely. I run DNS servers inside that are, all they have is IPv6 addresses, and from the outside world it looks like they've got a V4 address, but they don't.
Ah. Yeah, okay. Yep. I like your idea. I'd like to subscribe to your magazine.
Anybody else?
Greg Soak, Telecom New Zealand. Hey, just having a look over the last hour or two, we've seen a lot of people getting up and saying, hey, there's all these different migration methods, 4-6, 6-4, and IVI now. You say that this is partially in development, and we're looking at a two-year timeout on the availability of IPv4. Where does your point of view on, hey, maybe this is a little late to actually push this as a solution for migration.
Compared to what?
Just, hang on. Just, what is the IPv6 task force view on IVI? You know, is there a view internationally of, you know, is this a method? Is there a specific industry method that we should be looking at towards migration?
Okay. So I'm going to put on my bias hat. Carefully, I take off my neutral academic hat and I put on my hat of bias. As a member of the North American IPv6 Task Force, the North American IPv6 Task Force encourages people to aggressively migrate to IPv6 as quickly as possible using certified and logoed IPv6-ready product. This isn't one of them. There isn't one that does IPv6 translation that carries the IPv6-ready logo. There are many partial products out there. Cisco has had an implementation of NAT-PT for, Philip, how many years?
Nine.
And is it production quality OOG?
Of course not.
Okay, right. But it's a Cisco. It's got a Cisco brand on it. You call your Cisco rep and then complain about it, and they'll go, and they'll support you, sort of, right? So you can get partial solutions. The NAT 6-4 or 6-4-6 stuff, the dual stack stuff that I'm familiar with, is coming out of some work done by Comcast. Comcast has got a lot of money, and they're pushing a lot of people, and they're paying a lot of people to write a lot of code. There is no IETF standard. The IETF people actually had these meetings to say, look, there are too many competing things. There's no standard here. The industry is never going to gel on anything unless we can trim away some of the stuff that's going on here. Where do we put the gateway and the translation functions? So it's still a moving target as far as I can tell. Unfortunately, that doesn't slow down the fact that people still need and consume IPv4 addresses, and we know where the brick wall on that is. Whether the standard can be agreed upon and code built and shipped in time looks to be a betting man's game. It's going to be close. For me, again, taking my North American V6 Task Force hat off and putting back on my academic hat, because it's a source code that I can know, read, and control, it uses relatively inexpensive hardware, stuff that people would normally throw away. And because I'm an academic and I'm cheap, I can actually turn up IPv6, I can reduce my OPEX costs because I don't have to support two protocol stacks on a whole bunch of different machines. I've got one. I've got a couple of choke points that I can actually manage with source code that I can control. I'm going to turn this on everywhere that I can and then do the upgrades as they come along. So from my production standpoint, I'm committed to this until they turn it off. So sorry I can't give you a better solution, but we're toast.
Next question. How soon would the patches likely be in mainline kernel code for Linux?
You have to talk to Xun Li and his folks because they're the ones doing the kernel work.
Have we got any more questions?
No more questions.
Yep.
No.
Bill, don't worry. Brian Carpenter, I'm still mulling over the previous question and your answer to it. I mean, I think we have to be honest. A number of people noticed that IPv4 addresses were going to run out before IPv6 was fully deployed, which was not the original model, right? And that means some of the assumptions we made in designing the original solutions of record, which have got the appropriate logo certifications, you know, those assumptions have turned out to be historically wrong. So what Bill's been giving you is an insight into what's being looked into to try and fix this for bits of the network where IPv4 runs out before IPv6 has got widely deployed. So it is still work in progress. And that doesn't mean you have to stop any plans you currently have based on the plan of record. And I think that's, you know, the reassuring part of this. The old solutions, except NAT-PT, are still considered perfectly respectable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're considered perfectly respectable. But from an OPEX standpoint, deploying dual stack in a lot of different places as opposed to doing dual stack in a couple of places tells me that my OPEX goes way down. And other stuff is, you know, you've got your plan of record of doing migrations to IPv6. By all means, proceed along the path for those things. But as Brian points out, some of the initial assumptions have changed. And so even if you've got a plan of record, you better be evaluating that plan of record because the assumptions behind it have changed. It's not a fixed target. So, yeah, this is still all very much work in progress. I like this one. There are other people who like other ones, and they all more or less work. And again, if you want copies of the code, come hunt me down and I'll give it to you. Or tell you where to get it. Okay? Thank you.